Welcome, everyone, then, to a very, very special episode of Grizzly Peaks Radio. This is something I've been looking forward to and possibly also dreading for quite a long time, because we are letting Scott take the reins, get into the driver's seat, and probably kill us all brutally and horribly fairly quickly. So Scott has very kindly offered to run us all through an improvised game of Cthulhu Dark, and that is pretty much all we know. I believe it's going to be a goth-flavoured, which I guess is snakebite.
And blackcurrant, yeah.
And blackcurrant, snakebite and black. So I'm handing over then to Scott, who can introduce the game. Scott, over to you.
Well, thank you, Andy. So let's talk about Cthulhu Dark, first of all. So Cthulhu Dark is a very rules-like system that was written by my friend Graham Walmsley some time back and has been published in a few iterations. You can find the free version online, which is like a three-page pamphlet that explains everything about playing the game. But there is, in fact, a proper game book that's got loads of setting information and lots of stuff about writing your own Lovecraftian scenarios and things like that. And I really do highly recommend it. But in this case, we're just really going to use the mechanics, and we're going to use a slight tweak of the mechanics as well. So the idea of Cthulhu Dark is that your characters are defined by just a name and an occupation. Then when they get themselves into situations where there's some investigation or some uncertainty, then you basically just roll a d6, and the idea is the higher the result you get, the better. And so if you were to, say, poke around the old crypt looking to see if there was something hidden down there, you'd roll a d6, and yeah, if you got a 1 or a 2, you'd find the bare minimum of what you needed. A 3 or a 4, you'd find something substantial. On a 5, you'd find absolutely everything you could possibly find down there. And on a 6, you might find a bit more than you wanted to. And you can get an additional die by bringing your occupation into play. So you decide before we start playing what your character's occupation is. And let's say in that situation that your occupation was something like a church deacon. So you actually know the catacombs fairly well, looking after them as part of your job. So you might say, oh, okay, well, I'll bring my occupation into this. And so you get an additional d6, and you just take the higher of the two results. There is always a third die you can bring in. But before I explain that, I'll explain the one stat that you have in the game, which is a stat called Insight. In the old version of Dead of Night, it used to be Insanity, but it's now Insight, and it's how much you understand the things that you really shouldn't understand. I'm not necessarily seeing this particular game as being a mythos game, so I'm going to go for a slight tweak. Because what Graham's done in a couple of games I played with him recently is used it as a more general horror thing, where instead of it reflecting insanity or insight into the mysteries beyond human imagining, it reflects how much your character has been changed by the things they've undergone. And that can involve shock and learning terrible secrets. It can also involve physical damage as well. So what I'd say is that any time you, say, take damage or something like that, there is a chance that your insight will increase. Similarly, if there's something shocking that goes on, there's a chance your insight will increase. Your insight starts at 1. And what happens is, every now and then, I will generally ask you to make an insight roll, but you can absolutely volunteer to make an insight roll as well. So if you encounter something truly terrible, and I've neglected to point that out, then please, by all means, do say, I should probably roll insight there. And the idea is that you roll a d6, and if your result is over your current insight, your insight goes up by 1. If at any point your insight hits 6, then that basically means your character is somehow destroyed. It may be that they're driven mad by the revelations they've seen. It may be that they're physically destroyed, but whatever it is, something terrible is going to happen to them. So, as I said, you do have a third die that you can bring in at any stage, which is your insight die. And what that reflects is, well, all sorts of things. It basically reflects your character doing things that aren't necessarily within the normal scope of human endeavour. So it could be matters that are esoteric and eldritch and magical and stuff like that, or it could just simply be acts of pure desperation. So what happens is, let's say that, you know, at some point you find this sinister stone altar down in the catacombs, and you decide that this is where the haunting emanations are coming from, and you want to contact or speak to whatever it is that is embedded within that stone. You could just roll an inside die, and that functions the same as any other one. The only thing is that it automatically triggers an insight roll doing that. So you'd roll that, and then, you know, let's say that you got a 5, you'd make contact with this spirit and learn its hideous secret and stuff like that. But because you used your insight die there, you'd have to make an insight roll afterwards, so your insight might risk going up. You can also use your insight die for getting rerolls. So let's say that, again, you're poking around the catacombs trying to find something hideous down there. You've rolled your 2 dice, your 1 for being a church deacon and 1 your ordinary human die, and you've only got a 1 and a 2. You know there's a lot more down there you could learn, you really want to. So you think, I want a reroll. And the good news is that you get 3 dice this time. You have to include your insight die on that reroll, and if that comes up higher than the other 2, then you have to make an insight roll. So each time you do that, you're gambling with your character's longevity. And you can have as many rerolls as you want. Knock yourselves out.
Which is a likely result of doing it multiple times.
Indeed. There is also the possibility of failure, but failure isn't baked into the system by default. What happens is someone, usually the GM, but it can be any player at the table, can decide, oh, I think it'd be interesting if he failed to find something down in the catacombs. I don't know why you'd think that. I mean, you'd normally save that for a more dangerous role, but someone could decide that, yeah, perhaps their character has got something hidden down there that they don't want you to find. So they can just decide, okay, I'll roll against you. This doesn't reflect their character taking action against you. This is just simply narrative. And if they roll higher than you on 1d6, then you fail. Now, the other rule from Cthulhu Dark, which I don't think we'll use here, is the combat system. The combat system in Cthulhu Dark boils down to, if you fight a monster, you die. And that doesn't exactly reflect the genre here. It is more Lovecraftian. So what I'll say here is that you can deal with fighting or running away from a monster or whatever, you know, just like any other role. But obviously that's going to risk driving your insight up further and pushing you further to destruction. So yeah, let's deal with it like that.
Scott, I might have missed this just listening to the waves of erudition flowing over me. How does an insight roll work?
You roll 1d6, and if the result is over your current insight, your insight goes up by 1.
Over or equal to? Because if it's...
Over.
Oh, over. So at 5, if you roll 6, and then you're done.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
So we start with insight 1, and we're very likely to go up to insight 2 quite quickly.
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
And then it gets harder and harder to go up, statistically.
No, I was just going to say, as a pacing mechanism, it works fairly well. It usually means your character will last about 3 or 4 hours of play.
Okay. So the question I have, maybe I didn't quite get this. You can either decide you want to roll an insight dice just straight off with your human dice to roll 2. Is that right?
Yep. And your profession die, if that applies.
And yep. Your profession. Or you could not roll it. And then if you fail, you can re-roll with all 3. Is that right?
Yep.
So what would the difference be between those two? I mean, I guess one, you're hedging your bets. Is it the same outcome regardless if you roll the insight dice highest?
Yeah, I mean, if you're gaming the system, there is very little advantage to including the inside die on your first roll. But if you are in conflict with someone else, I mean, that's the other thing. If you're in conflict with the character, they roll against you, you might want to just get the conflict over with completely and roll as many dice as possible on your first roll.
I see. And if your insight dice is lower than one of the others, then it doesn't trigger an insight roll.
That's right, yeah. Or even equal to. It's got to be higher.
Oh, it's got to be higher. Okay.
So on that basis, we need to choose one particular dice to be our insight dice, don't we? I'm going to choose red.
I'm choosing red as well. I'm choosing my red, transparent red dice.
Mine is not transparent. It's just thick red.
I think mine's prettier. But then again, I can't see yours, so we'll see.
I think yours, you know, yours could be prettier, but I'm not. It's not a competition, so it's fine.
We'll see.
It's only not a competition because your camera isn't on.
Girls, girls, stop fighting. You're both pretty.
I'll switch my camera on later. If this goes as well as it could do, I'll show you all my non-translucent red D6.
Nice.
Or you could just post them to your only die site.
So, Barney, was it the Cthulhu Dark random tables that we used all that time ago for your game?
No.
Oh, that was something else. Oh, that was Azathoth's answer.
Exactly. Except that was the Cthulhu hack.
Cthulhu hack.
But Cthulhu Dark was kind of... it was in there in the early thoughts about it all. But anyway, very nice. This is Scott, your explanation of all of this was wonderful. So
yes.
Okay, good. Well, I mean, if at any stage you need a reminder about anything, then I'll quite happily go through mechanics as they come into play. But it's pretty rules light.
One question. There's a slight... You sort of implied that there might be some sort of antagonism between the player characters, rather.
Oh, yes.
Is that inherent, or is it just if it happens, whatever?
In my experience, it does seem to be fairly inevitable, but that may be more of a reflection of the people I play with than the system itself.
So basically, if Andy ever tries to do anything, I might say, no, it doesn't work, like that.
And then roll a dice.
Just for the sake of it, you know.
Just as an example. Just as a random example of something that might happen, Barney.
That won't happen more than once.
And also, just in case it ever comes into play, and it might do, as well as that abstract failure die, there's always the option that your characters act in direct opposition to each other. In which case, you have contests between the characters where you basically both roll and whoever gets the higher result wins. If it's a tie, then it's a stalemate.
And you can use your occupation in those roles, yeah?
Yes.
And your insight and all of that.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yep, okay.
Okay, I think we're all good then. Do we need a pencil? I can see that Spencer has. Is it good to have a pencil?
Yep.
I've always got a pencil.
Or a notepad, or, you know, a note-taking application on your computer, or any way of keeping notes, because you have to decide three things here. And before we get into the character creation, let's talk a little bit about the setting. So this is going to be, as Andy mentioned earlier, a gothic horror-type game. And when I say gothic horror... I mean, that is a very broad term and can mean all sorts of things, but in this particular case, I'm thinking about a lot of the horror films that came out of the 1930s through to the 1960s, where they are kind of generic, perhaps 17th, 18th century European settings, maybe even 19th century. The locations are very poorly defined. They are sort of somewhere in Europe. And if you watch a lot of these old Hammer films, these Italian films, sometimes they pin down the locations very nicely. Other times, you have people with names from all sorts of different cultures just in this place that is generically European. And that's the approach we're going for here, because why not? And what we're going to do is use a bunch of random tables I put together some years back, inspired by different things from various gothic horror films and stories, that will then create the foundations of this improvised game. I guess it probably makes more sense to do those random elements and then create the characters, because the characters may be informed by the elements that we get here. Or you may even see an implied or a specifically named character come up from one of these elements and think, oh, actually, no, that's what I want to play. So the way we do this is I've basically got 100 random elements here. So we each roll percentile dice, and then we'll roll once more, or rather I'll roll twice. And then we'll discard the two elements that appeal to us least out of these and see what we can do with what remains. So if I were clever, I would have had a dice roll already.
Well, I've got real dice here. I can use my...
If I were clever, I wouldn't have put all my dice bag away so quick after getting those three D6s out.
Ah. So my preparation this week of reading Bram Stoker is not going to help, because this is more schlock goth than, like, literary gothic romance.
It can run the spectrum of the more serious end, but gothic horror was always schlocky. I mean, it started out with The Castle of Otranto, which is schlocky as fuck. But that is not a story one can take seriously.
That is true. That is true, yes.
It's always worth reading Dracula, Andy.
Well, I'm ashamed to say it's the first time I've ever read it. It's ridiculous. But yes.
Which is your favourite bit?
My favourite moment is when he sees him crawling down the outside of the castle walls. That's such an amazing moment. It just... I'm ashamed to say, because it is absolutely brilliant. I haven't finished it yet. The first four chapters are amazing.
I think for me, it's when Mina sees...
Don't tell me.
But you haven't had the boat in Whitby.
Oh, I have, yeah. The captain's lashed to the thing. Mm.
When Mina sees Lucy over, like, the other side of the bay, is it up on the... by the church, and she's lying on a bench or something, and she thinks she sees the figure, a figure standing over her. I thought that was good. The whole boat thing is great.
The captain lashed to the boat is amazing. It's amazing. But anyway, should we roll then? Should we each roll a D100?
Yes, please do.
I'm going to make that dice rolling sound that Barney does so well. There we go. Wow. Oh, no, that's not 9. Oh, that is 99.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Is that a fumble?
So, 99 is an executioner who enjoys his work far too much.
Wow.
Good God.
Now, this is just the setting. This isn't the character.
Yes. These are the elements out of which we'll create the game. So that doesn't have to be your character. It can be an NPC. It could be a player character. We'll decide that as the next stage.
Okay.
How about you, Jen? What did you roll?
72.
72. Okay, 72 is a plague that destroys both the flesh and the mind.
So syphilis, then?
Quite possibly.
Which is what Bram Stoker apparently died of.
Huh. And how about you, Spencer?
I rolled 53.
53. Okay, yeah, this is one of the more obvious elements as to where I've lifted it from. A hideous mask designed to be fastened with iron nails.
That's good. And what is that from?
Black Sunday.
Oh, I've never seen it. Never seen it. As I said, lots of catching up to do. An iron mask attached by... Ooh.
And Barney, how about you?
I've rolled 30.
30. This is going to be difficult to work in. A young woman who dances with the people who live under the hill. And the two that I've rolled are 5, which is the forgotten ruins where a secretive cabal meet on moonless nights. And 13, a stranger come to town seeking release from a terrible curse. So, to recap, the 6 elements that we have are... an executioner who enjoys his work far too much, a plague that destroys both the flesh and the mind, a hideous mask designed to be fastened with iron nails, a young woman who dances with the people who live under the hill, the forgotten ruins where a secretive cabal meet on moonless nights, and a stranger come to town seeking release from a terrible curse. Are there any of those that particularly don't work for anyone? Because we're looking to lose 2 of these.
I think most of them fit except the culty one. But that's just my... because I can see the executioner and the mask like being... and the stranger coming to town, he's the executioner. He has this mask which he's cursed to wear and blah, blah, blah. That all sort of works. But I don't know, having a cult as well, I think is a bit much. But that's just my opinion.
Okay, I mean, does losing that work for everyone else?
So losing the forgotten ruins, yeah, the cult meeting, right.
Yes.
Yeah, sounds fine.
We're looking to lose 1 more, so we're left with the executioner who enjoys his work far too much, the plague that destroys both the flesh and the mind, a hideous mask designed to be fastened with iron nails, a young woman who dances with the people who live under the hill, and a stranger come to town seeking release from a terrible curse.
I'll propose we get rid of the young woman who dances with the people under the hill, seeing as you thought that's hard to put in.
Yeah, I'm not saying it wouldn't work, I'm just saying it fits in less with the others, I think, but okay.
Well, you know, we're going for kind of, you know, if this is a gothic movie, you don't want overcomplicated elements, do you?
I agree wholeheartedly, Barney.
What dance sequences?
We can still have dancing, young women dancing, it's fine. It's
good. Oh, yes, yeah, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Surely we should call it cavorting, though, if we're, you know.
We should.
Well, I didn't want to use the C word.
Does it bring back traumatic memories, Barney?
Oh, hills, dancing, yes. Although that does evoke, the young woman dancing with the people under the hill does evoke, oh, what's his name?
British. Arthur Machen.
Arthur Machen, yeah.
Yes, yeah, that was a very deliberate nod to the white people.
Yes, I thought so. Lovely.
Okay, so we are left with an executioner who enjoys his work far too much, a plague that destroys both the flesh and the mind, a hideous mask designed to be fastened with iron nails, and a stranger come to town seeking release from a terrible curse. Now, based on those, are there any of those that inspire any of you to a particular kind of character?
I was leaning towards maybe an older gentleman, kind of maybe a bit of a curmudgeon. Whether that fits the executioner role or not, I'm not sure about that. That's why I'm looking for a profession.
It's up to you. I'm quite happy.
Yeah, what are the job prospects for a curmudgeon, Spencer?
Back then, it was a highly lucrative...
A curmudgeon with a bludgeon, perhaps.
It was more of a hobby than a profession, I thought.
So, in my mind, this is already evoking a setting very much like The Mask of the Red Death, where there's, with the plague out in the town, and then the sort of secure area where the people who, the privileged few, get to avoid the plague, but of course they can't escape it, and the executioner...
I think, see, what it suggests to me is more that we're at the point where the plague arrives and people haven't quite comprehended it yet. They haven't fled to the castle, so stuff is happening and nobody's quite worked out what it is.
And is the executioner the avatar of that plague, or is he the one sent out to sort of punish the...
But don't people say, don't shoot the executioner? Isn't that what people say? You know, I mean, the execution... Go on, Jenny, sir.
I don't know if they actually do say that. I think that's why the executioner wears a mask, so that you don't shoot him. Because they don't explicitly say, oh, don't shoot this guy. They just make it harder to know who he is.
But, you know, the executioner is an intermediary. You know, the executioner is told to kill someone who's gone through some kind of legal process, apparently. They're not, you know, serial killers.
I was just thinking perhaps the plague was brought in by the stranger, the cursed stranger.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's very good. I had initially been thinking that maybe I would play a widow, which is not really a profession, but options for women were limited at that time. And then the executioner who enjoys their work far too much. I wonder how many husbands she had, but I don't know if that really fits a gothic setting.
I think you could work with that. And who says there has to be just one executioner?
There can be so many. There's so many. We all have worth and value.
Is it my imagination, or did Tori Amos have a song called Professional Widow?
She did.
So I know I'd sort of come up with the idea before you even did all of this of being a consumptive poet. I'm not sure. I'm trying to see how this would fit in if there is a sort of castle or manor house, or maybe he is visiting there when all the horror starts.
Yeah, it's gothic horror. Of course there's a castle.
Yes.
Yes.
So I think I'll stick with my poet, although occupationally that's not very useful, is it, being a poet, I don't think, in any context.
It might help you with certain social skill roles and stuff like that, your gift of flowery speech. Literacy might help in certain cases.
That's true. Okay, so I will stick then with Sheridan de la Tour, the consumptive poet. Perhaps he's worried that he brought the plague. Maybe he's trying to hide that himself.
Ooh, like the guy in the zombie movies who's trying to hide the bite.
Could you and the stranger come in on the same, you know, express, wagon, whatever it is?
Oh, the same carriage. Yes, that's a nice one.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a whole load of people who come on the carriage, or maybe some of them carry on, you know.
Yeah, starting off with the carriage coming to town with strangers is a classic gothic opening. I mean, not just Dracula, but also Barber's Kill Baby Kill starts that way.
That other literary classic.
I mean, it's Kill Baby Kill. It may have a shit title, but it is, I think, one of the greatest gothic films ever made.
I'll have to check it out. Maybe we can all come in on that stagecoach. Wouldn't that be a good... I don't know. I mean, I guess we'd have to... The characters would have to fit, but isn't that like the classic start?
Just to break that, I'd like to be the stable boy, please.
Okay.
So we're arriving to the castle then, the rest of us then. You're the widow. Maybe you've left your last town because that was one husband too many in the previous town, Jen. You're moving on to the new one. I don't know.
I have worked my way through most of the small towns are terrible, and I think I've worked my way through most of the men who could keep me in the state to which I am accustomed to. So.
And the curmudgeon, Spencer, your curmudgeon on...
I've come reluctantly. I'm here for maybe some business or something. I don't particularly want to be here. That's what I'm kind of struggling with at the moment.
like human trafficking or something? Or,
well, I wasn't really thinking. I was thinking of something maybe a bit more kind of a pedestrian, maybe coming to get some papers signed or something. I don't know, some kind of legal.
Oh, yeah.
You're a traffic warden.
Or perhaps a doctor, if, you know, it's been brought to the town because of the plague.
Little do I know, it's coming in with me.
Yes, and the plague has been spreading through the countryside, but it hasn't yet hit the town, and therefore you're coming to maybe...
Yeah, perhaps I'm coming to discover the secret of why they've not fallen to the plague yet.
This can be a plot error, which we can just, you know, comb over.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, don't worry about things like that. Lots of plenty of dream logic flying around.
There's some ambiguity as to whether it has already hit the town or whether it's going to hit the town.
Well, I'm sure Scott can figure that out.
Yeah, I think perhaps if the plague has been spreading through the land, but there is this old walled town, this remote community, which, of course, has got a castle on the hill overlooking it. Because it is a walled city or walled town, perhaps it has avoided the plague until now, but that can't last, can it?
And is it likely, then, the executioner is going around just executing anyone that shows any signs of the sniffles?
I mean, we don't have to decide ahead of time who the executioner is. I mean, these are things that I can bring it at any stage.
It's just like Witchfinder General. We've got to get Vincent Price in here somewhere. I mean,
okay, so what are the other people's names? Just so we know.
Is it okay if I'm the stable boy in the walled town, so I've got a bit of local knowledge?
Sure. Well, just thinking in terms of making sure that you've got reasons to interact with the other characters, at least sometimes. Would the other characters be going to the castle or the town itself?
Good point. Maybe our first stop is in the town, perhaps, before we head up to the castle, or maybe that's just where we're dropped off.
I could be the stagecoach boy. I'm the little kid who sits on the back of the stagecoach.
A little dung monkey.
And you'll be helping with the luggage and maybe...
Yeah, exactly. I'm happy with that. It's menial. It's comparably menial.
And maybe one of us needs to hire a boy to carry the bags and do whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. If anyone needs anything done, just flick a penny my way. It's good.
I'll hire a boy. I'll always hire a boy.
Is that all right? So I'll be the coach boy.
Great. And what's your name?
So we're keeping this ambiguous, but are we north, east, south or west, Scott?
The NPC names that I've got at the moment are a mix of Germanic with some Hungarian.
Okay, so kind of east. Okay, I'll be... I don't know. Come back to me in a moment. I don't know. Let me think about it.
Piotr.
Piotr. Yeah, thank you. Okay, yeah, I'll take that. Yeah.
Piotr, the stagecoach boy.
Yeah.
And what's the curmudgeon's name?
I'm Dr. Hector Blench.
That sounds like a mashup of several of the other people's characters from the past. I like it.
Spencer's Hector is playing the long game.
Have we already had a Hector, haven't we?
And the Widow. Yes, Barney's first character was a Hector.
Oh, was he? Oh, maybe I should change that. Well, Dr. Blench. Shall I just go for Dr.?
No, it's good.
Maybe Henry. Henry Blench. Henry Blench.
Dr. Blench. Dr. Hector Blench. Henry Blench.
Henri.
Yes, I'm Gisela Hasenfuss.
Ooh, wonderful.
Of course you are.
Frau Hasenfuss.
Hasenfuss means rabbit's foot.
Or hare's foot.
Not so lucky for your husbands, though.
Well, we all go to our eternal reward one of these days.
Brilliant. I'm loving this already.
And your character, Andy, was, remind me?
Sheridan de la Tour.
What's that, Sheridan?
And your occupation is consumptive poet.
Consumptive poet, yes.
I love that having consumption is a job for you.
It was back then, I think, wasn't it? It was part of the job description.
It's true. It did take up a lot of your free time, for sure.
Could you really consider yourself to be a romantic poet if you didn't have consumption?
Well, I think syphilis.
If you didn't have syphilis, that's what you'd need. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Sheridan has persuaded the doctor to come along with him to help with his ailment.
Maybe.
Yeah, as well as, you know, investigating the situation.
So Sheridan is absolutely loaded. And
yeah.
Gisela, who's freshly widowed again. How manyth time, Gisela?
I think, hang, one, two, three, that I think he was number five, but who's counting, really?
What I suggest is let's do some of this in character. Now that we've nailed down the basics of this, I think we're almost ready to start. So if there's nothing else that we need to pin down about the characters, yeah, let's launch into an opening scene. So you are travelling by coach across this desolate landscape. When I say desolate, it's quite pretty in places. In this mountainous region, there's the occasional bit of forest that you go through, some fairly thick forest. But what makes it desolate is when you've passed through villages or passed by small towns. There haven't been many people out. The coachman has refused to stop at any stage. He's been whipping the horses, trying to get through the countryside as quickly as possible. Because you all know that the plague has come to the land. You all know that the people are dying of fever, you know, their bodies covered in boils. And the fever drives some of them to acts of madness before death finally takes them. But you, at least, are all secure within the carriage itself. The coachman is, as I said, sitting atop the carriage, not sparing the horses at all. It is, at this stage, coming up to evening. There is mist in the air, and you've just passed through one last community where there have been, you know, a few lanterns lit, but you know, maybe a few shapes you've seen shambling through the mist, but you know, no real signs of what you'd consider to be life. But maybe we'll make it to the walls of Karlsgrad soon, and to the safety they offer.
Dr. Blench, I have to say I am... Can I talk to you in confidence?
Yes, yes, what is it?
Well, just turn away from that young lady there. I would not like her to read my lips or hear what I have to say.
I doubt she'll hear anything over this infernal carriage.
Well, you see, I believe the dose of laudanum you gave me earlier has not been as efficacious as I would have hoped. And would you be so kind as to just palm me maybe one or two more vials so I could use them at my discretion?
Very well, very well.
You do notice it's the only thing that keeps me from hacking up one of my lungs, you see.
Yes, yes, I understand.
Pyotr is holding on to the outside of the carriage for dear life, but he's got massive ears, and he's got, you know, a really big gap in between his teeth as well. So this young actor is really just perfect for the part. So he's really holding on. You can see the white of the hands as this carriage is going along really fast. But he's got these massive ears and these big split teeth. And he's accidentally, on purpose, you know, overhearing this conversation going on.
And as I take the two vials of laudanum in my hand as carefully as possible, I realise that you're hanging down and peering in through the window at me. And I turn to you and I say, "Get back on the top, boy. This is none of your concern." As I slip them into my waistcoat pocket.
Yeah, I look out onto the landscape again as if nothing ever happened.
Yeah, and you look out over a little farm that you can just see from the road. Where in the mist, you can just catch a glimpse of one lone figure standing there. You can't tell whether it's a man, woman, child. Just this figure there in the mist, standing there, looking at you. You can feel their eyes upon you, even if you can't quite see the details. And just involuntarily, a shudder goes through you.
Can I make an insight roll, please?
Straight off.
Okay, yes, if you want to make an insight roll, you absolutely can.
If I can feel this figure looking at me from quite a distance away, and I don't know if it's a man, woman, or child, I mean, that's clearly quite disturbing. So here we go.
Please do.
Oh, failed it. So I'm on to two.
Excellent, and so it begins.
So Piotr's there on the top of it, laughing away.
So you still have to roll above a three, do you, on your insight roll to get a success? Is that right, or...?
No. Yeah, what that means is if at any stage Barney has to make an insight check for Pyotr, then the next time, if he rolls a one or a two, his insight doesn't go up. But if it's a three, then his insight goes up by one. That's unrelated to what kind of success he needs if he rolls his insight die just on a normal test.
I see.
Yeah, that's not related. The reason it's called an insight die is because using it provokes insight checks, or risks provoking insight checks.
I lean forward and I say, Herr Frau Hassenfuss, please avert your eyes. There's a simply ghastly figure there looming in the mist. I would not like you to take fright.
It'll take a little bit more than a figure in the mist to frighten me, and I don't like taking orders from men that I don't know. And I'm looking out the window, but it's at him, really.
And as you talk about how it's going to take more than that to frighten you, in the mist, the driver must have somehow not noticed. You don't know if it's a rot in the road or a rock or whatever, but there's suddenly a bang and the carriage jumps, then starts skidding a bit. You can hear the horses whinnying in terror up ahead. I think I do want a roll from Piotr to see how well he holds on to the outside here, and I want to roll against him.
Okay, here we go. Oh, it's a two.
Okay, and I only rolled a one.
Wow.
So it must have looked like quite a hairy moment. You know, really, there's the whites of the hands that you really, this kid is bucked up on the top of this carriage.
Yeah, I think you've been slammed against the side of the carriage. You can just see the figure of the boy waving like a fleshy flag off the side of the coach, but still holding on. But the coach itself, on the other hand, isn't doing that well. You can feel that it's shuddering and then it grinds to a halt.
What in God's name's going on?
The coachman up above, he's shouting something barbaric at the horses. You can hear the horses whinnying in alarm. And then you hear him clamber off the top and hammer on the side of the coach and says, please, dear passengers, stay within. The wheel has been damaged. I will see whether I can repair it, but it is dangerous. You must not come out.
Certainly it would make more sense for us to be out of the carriage in order to fix the wheel. This is most disagreeable.
He says, I cannot ask passengers to do that. It's too dangerous. Piotr will help me repair the wheel.
These delicate hands have never lifted a carriage wheel in their entire existence, and I do not intend to change that now.
I don't think you're in any condition to be out there, to be honest.
Well.
Precisely, precisely.
Yes, you seem a little altered, Mr. Dilator.
No.
Just a little sweaty, little glassy-eyed, little different.
The late hour, no doubt. The late hour and the lack of a decent supper.
Oh, up past your bedtime, I see, dear.
At the top of Piotr's head is visible in the background of the shot, walking back and forwards, even though he's meant to be on the other side helping with the wheel.
Yes, I mean, outside the carriage, Piotr can hear... I'm pronouncing your name differently every time I say it, aren't I? Piotr can hear Anton, the coach driver, muttering to himself as he's looking under the carriage. And he says, oh, this isn't good. This isn't good, Anton. This isn't good. Not here. We can't stop here. Not like this. Boy, help me with this.
Have you ever seen such a nervous coachman in all your life? What on earth is going on down there? It's just a bit of mist, a bit dark, and a broken spoke on a wheel. I think he'd seen this sort of thing a thousand times.
Creatures?
There's creatures that crawl in the night. Things that you wouldn't want to meet. Well, do you want to meet a wolf or a bear?
I suppose.
Well, if it scared the horses, I trust their judgment over anyone else in this carriage.
Very wise, madam.
Pshaw! I don't know where you get that idea from. It's a ghastly idea. A horse having more sense than a man? Hardly.
I've met many men, and I've met many horses, and the horses always had better sense than the men.
I've known you a long time, Sheridan.
And?
Well, I'm just saying, I've met horses.
Piotr is stroking the horses and kind of whispering in their ears and really holding the heads of the horses and just stroking them and whispering to them and waiting to be harshly summoned to the undercarriage.
And I'd lean out the window and just inquire as to how much longer is this going to take?
Sure, yeah, you lean out and you can just hear muttering and swearing coming from under the carriage. You're aware that the carriage is leaning at something of an angle, and now that you're leaning outside the carriage yourself, you can see that it's definitely at an angle to the ground. It's not upright.
Dr. Blencher, would you be so good as to hop out and help Anton? You seem to be in rather fine fettle and certainly in better physical condition than either myself or Frau Hassenfuss. And after all, I am paying away.
I don't doubt that I'm in better health than yourself, sir. But as for this lady here, I don't dare to speculate on such matters.
Well, perhaps she can get out too. She looks like she's got a bit of heft about her.
Heft? Excuse me, sir. You're awfully generous with other people's time and efforts, aren't you?
Well, you see, my dear.
Well, I say maybe you should exercise those lily-soft hands of yours. There's no time like the present to learn a new skill. The only thing we're born knowing how to do is cry. You're free to learn how to do other things at any time in your life.
Is that plenty of opportunity, madam?
My dear Frau Hassenfuss, if I could, I would, but I simply can't. It's just not possible. In my condition.
Oh, you poor delicate lamb, you. Well, clearly, no one else is willing to go and see what the matter is, so I shall exit the carriage with sort of an imperious air.
Okay, and yeah, you jump out of the carriage. It's difficult to do so in a delicate way, because no one's put the stairs down for you, so you're having to drop down.
I'll hop down, and I'm not trying to impress anybody in this carriage.
Piotr is, of course he's going to get the steps out.
Oh, thank you, boy.
That's his job. Or maybe he can just help her down, like, put his hands out. She can step on his hands.
Whatever the budget allows.
I toss him a penny and I ruffle his hair.
As Piotr is getting the stairs and bring them round for Frau Hassenfuss, the mist is getting thicker and you're not sure, but you think you perhaps saw someone moving in the mist somewhere nearby. But it is getting dark as well. It's difficult to tell.
I say, Anton, how far are we from this miserable town of Karlsgrad?
It feels like we've been travelling all day. Well, surely it can't be much further.
You can just hear swearing coming from under the carriage.
Yes, I'm going to duck underneath the carriage to see if I can see Anton and say, excuse me, Mr. Anton, is there anything that we could be doing to help? I mean, it seems as though it would be easier to ride the carriage if it weren't so full of people, but I have only a rudimentary understanding of physics, so.
He says, of course, madam, but you do understand you're safer in there. The plague, madam, the plague.
The plague? Was it the plague that startled the horses?
No. But this is going to take some work. Send the boy down here once he's finished helping you.
Oh, certainly. I kind of affectionately ruffle his head and say, oh, you dear boy, you're working so hard. But Mr. Anton needs you again.
So Piotr is going to crawl under the carriage.
Yeah, and you can see in the lantern light as Anton's looking up, he's got an ashen look on his face as he is staring at what is very obviously a broken axle.
What is that giggling fool doing now?
What are you laughing at, boy? This is no laughing matter.
No, sir, it's not. It's certainly not, sir. Sorry, sir.
Unless we can get the carriage moving, then we'll have to continue on foot, and we're still miles from Karlsgrad. We'll be walking through the night.
Piotr's really trying to process that, and walking through the night, it's a hard thing to really imagine.
Well, and perhaps you flash back to that figure that you saw watching you from the fog earlier.
Oh, yes. Yes, I stare out towards the farm.
Yeah, the farm is a little way back now, but not as far back as you'd like. And from up ahead, you can all hear the sound of the horses, maybe not exactly crying out, but they're sounding more and more agitated.
How many horses are there?
There are four.
Would not leave the carriage and ride the horses?
I am not riding bareback, Doctor.
You'd rather walk?
I would rather. Piotr puts his back into it and fixes that axle.
I think Piotr will crawl out and beckons Frau Hasenfuss forwards to the horses and, starts to cut the reins from the horse So, you know, indicating that they should ride off on the horse, you know.
You can't just undo them.
Yeah, maybe Frau Hasenfuss would suggest that instead of...
Yeah, you know, you could just unbuckle it, dear. That would be fine. What's this one's name? And I start petting it. I'm making friends with it because we're going to...
Margarita.
Margarita. Margarita's a pretty girl. Yes, she is. Yes, she is. She's a pretty girl.
Pretty!
You're a jovial little fellow, aren't you?
In the failing light and the gloom, you can just make out the white of the horse's eyes. They do seem to be quite wide as it's stamping more and more in distress and pulling against the harness and looking increasingly jittery. The others are as well.
Yes, I'm trying very hard to calm her.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, Piotr's going to, you know, like, stroke and kiss the horse. It's talking to it in their special language that they have.
Blow up its nose.
Yes, I'm giving Margarita lots of, like, calming face massage and just kind of, like, rubbing her neck and just trying to, you know, like, yes, yes, you're afraid, darling, and that's why we have to leave this place. We have to leave this place very quickly, and you're going to help us do it, you brave girl.
This is the scene that got cut and got this film banned from so many territories, I tell you.
Yes.
Well, then I think one of you, and I'll let you choose which one, can make a roll to try to calm the horses down.
Isola, what do you think?
Piotr, are you... I mean, you know them better, I'm assuming.
I do know. Can I roll then with my occupation as, you know, coach hand?
You absolutely can, and I will roll against you because I want you to fail here.
Okay, here we go. I've got a 4.
I've got a malfunctioning dice roller that is just... What the fuck are you doing? Oh, okay. Well, I rolled a 1. So, yes, upsettingly, you are managing to keep the horses calm. They haven't quite tried bolting for it yet. But on the other hand, what is it that's upsetting them so much?
The boy was quite successful. We're not going to be moving anyway.
Yeah, you've calmed the horses, but Anton does... At least to Piotr's eyes, seems very gloomy about the prospect of getting this carriage moving again.
Well, Piotr and Gisela are basically riding off. We've unshackled the horse and we're riding off. Is that right, Frau Hasenfuss?
Yeah, I mean, that was what I thought made the most sense, is that we, you know, if it's really that dangerous, we need to get the heck out of here. And, you know, things are replaceable. I've replaced things many times. So, off we go.
We will have indicated in some rudimentary way that the others should do the same. But, you know, it's not like we prepared their horses for them.
How rude.
Rude. Rude. Rude, Mr. De La Tour, who's giving orders to women he doesn't know in stagecoaches. That's rude. Rude, Mr. De La Tour, who is taking narcotics in plain view of everyone in the carriage. Don't think you're being sneaky, Mr. De La Tour. You are not. You are not as sneaky as you think.
And that whole diatribe comes wafting over the mist, and I only catch about 10% of it.
Of course, yeah, no.
Rest of it is Piotr laughing.
I say to Dr. Blench, I don't believe she is. She has very good breeding, that lady. Now, as I was saying, I am absolutely not getting on one of those things, not in my condition.
We're not getting anywhere sitting here, are we? We're going to have to get up and get a move on, whether it's on horseback or on foot. But we are certainly going to have to start making some progress. So I've got a little something.
This Anton person will have to fix it. And as I say that, I lean out of the window with my rump high in the air facing you as I lean down.
Well, as you're doing that, I quickly slip out a syringe with some cocaine solution and give you a quick jab in the buttock, because I know you're not going to make it otherwise. So come on, get a move on, man.
I let out a small cry of pain. And I say, I'm ready, Doctor. I am ready. Let us go. What on earth was I thinking? Anton, you stay here, fix the coach. We're getting on those horses now.
Anton comes out, still clutching his lantern, and says, No, you must stay within the carriage. It's safe within the carriage. You...
Oh, pish-posh. Come on, Doctor. I'll race you.
Are you crazy, man? Look, we've got torches. We're fine. Any animals are going to keep away from us. The most we have to worry about is maybe some lawless footpads. But I fancy our chances, rather than sitting here like
sitting ducks.
Don't worry about footpads. I feel like I could knock down a tree with my bare hands. Now, let us get on those horses now and ride as fast as the wind to Karlsgrad.
Well, I'm willing to have Pyotr on the back of my horse so that Anton has one of his own. Because I really don't think, if it's this dangerous out here, I don't think it's right to leave him behind just because he's a service worker. That doesn't sit right with me. You know, you learn a lot about people by the way that they treat people that they think are lesser than them, don't you, Mr. De La Tour?
I'm not sure I agree fully with your politics, Frau Hassenfuss, but I suppose the spirit of human kindness is not dead in all of us. Not quite yet. Now, Anton, you take the one with the slight limp from the accident, and I'll take the very strong-looking one with that magnificent white mane. I just run forward and try and leap onto the horse.
Anton's saying, gentlemen, madam, you can't do these horses. They're not used to riders. This will end badly.
I'm going to roll a dice, I think, to see if I can get on the horse.
Yeah, I am very cheerfully going to roll against you.
Well, it's obviously not going to be an occupation dice, so I'm just going to roll one.
Okay.
Poet show jumper. That's what I didn't say
no.
at the beginning.
No.
Well, I rolled a 5.
I rolled a 6. So what the rest of you see is, as Pyotr and Frau Hassenfuss have unbuckled all the horses and they're now gearing up, some of them apparently in fright, ready to run off anyway. So Sheridan leaps onto one of the horses that's already pretty agitated, and the thing takes off uncontrollably. Sheridan he's barely hanging on. You're holding onto the mane at this stage. There obviously isn't a bridle. There's no reins. There's nothing like that. There's no saddle. You're being thrown around and bruised violently as this frightened horse is running off into the night. You are in no way in control of where it's going.
I'm totally in control!
Well, let's hope so.
Well, perhaps he's someone else's problem now.
Yes, there is that, I'm afraid. We are bound.
He is paying your way, isn't he?
In my haste, I left all my luggage, of course, in the carriage. But maybe my wallet is tucked away inside my pocket, Doctor. I can see your eyes lighting up at the thought, but perhaps my wallet is with me.
Don't worry. You know, you'll need your possessions eventually. And I'll ensure they're...
Right. I mean, his poems certainly aren't worth much.
You can't take it with you. Didn't you say that last time, Jenny?
Well, I'll take it with me.
You can't. You really can't.
I think I'm going to have to write a terrible poem before the next session and read it out at some point.
Please do.
Oh, God, please do.
Oh, you're going to be Gothic literature's answer to William McGonagall.
Fantastic. I'd be lucky to get to Pam Eyre's level, I think. That'd be my limit.
So, what is everyone else doing as you've seen Sheridan disappear off into the mist in the night?
Well, I'm certainly assessing the situation to see whether riding one of these horses is a viable prospect. Because if they're not up for it at all, I am going to continue on foot. I'm just assessing by what's gone on already as to whether it's a viable option.
What are you doing? Checking their legs and their teeth and their hooves and stuff?
Yes.
Just seeing whether the vibe is right. It's a vibe check.
The vibe. He's checking the vibe. Can we have a roll for vibes, please?
I don't think you need to make a roll for this. The horses are very agitated. Anton has given some fairly dire warnings. But on the other hand, you can see perhaps that his resolve is breaking somewhat as he's looking around into the mist and the darkness. And looking back at this carriage that is clearly not going anywhere.
What I'm guessing is, if Anton jumps on a horse, I'll get on the horse with Anton, in which case I'll be able to carry as much of the luggage as I can, perhaps doing that.
Even as you suggest this, Anton looks even more horrified than he did. And he's, the horses aren't strong enough to take all that on their back. Look, we can't take any of our possessions with us if we're doing this.
Okay, I'll certainly need some things. Let me just grab some vital things from my luggage.
Okay.
You hear the cry of, "Most invigorating!" come winging across from the gloom up ahead.
Pyotr's singing Karlsgrad by Midnight, which is a local folk song.
As Dr. Blench goes around to the back of the carriage where the luggage is fastened on the outside, you can just see in the mist and the gloom what you think is perhaps a human shape not too far away from the back of the carriage.
Being a man of science, I think I'm going to call out to the shape. Hello, you there!
And as you call that out, the figure moves towards you, is staggering a bit. And you can see what you think in the gloom is the outline of a young woman, maybe. Yeah, probably wearing a dress, certainly has long hair. Not particularly large, moving towards you.
Are you okay there, madam?
She seems to be staggering. And there's a muffled sound as she's moving towards you.
It suddenly dawns on me that this might be one of the infected wandering around. And I will quickly grab what I can from the bags.
Yes.
Okay. Well, do you want to give me a roll then, just to see how much useful stuff you can get?
Oh, roll a 5.
Okay. So, yeah, if you're doing this quickly, you're lucky. The bag you've got with your medical supplies or whatever else it is that you wanted to grab is right there on the top of the luggage. And so you do have a chance to just pull it loose. And you've got a chance to get away. You can see now that the figure is close to you. It hasn't quite caught up with you. And in the lantern light from Anton's lantern, you can just make out, yeah, it is a young woman or maybe a girl. And her face is covered with blisters and boils. Her eyes look quite swollen and red. And there's a look of panic at them. She's reaching out towards you. You can just about hear her trying to call for help, but there's something wrong with her voice. It's something perhaps obstructing her throat.
I'm sorry, madam. There's really nothing I can do at the moment. Okay? I'm going to back away round the carriage. And I think it's time for us to move.
Okay. And as Dr. Bledger says that, you can see this figure that's staggering weakly behind him, one hand raised up piteously, as if begging for help.
Dr. Bledger's not heard of the Hippocratic Oath, clearly.
I want to be available to provide the greater good.
Okay. And is everyone else desperately trying to get on horseback?
Yes. Absolutely. I've made friends with this one, Margarita.
He was in the toilet.
We've been on horseback for about 10 minutes. With the footage, you know, we've been trying to ride off for about...
Yeah.
Okay. Well then, Frau Hassenfuss and Piotr sharing a horse, or do they have one each?
We were sharing a horse, I think, so that Mr. Anton could have a horse and escape as well. And he's a little thing, so... He's terribly skinny. He's almost all ears, so...
Giotto is an orphan, and he's never been this close to a woman before. So it's, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. I think as Piotr is used to handling horses, I'm not going to ask for a roll here. I mean, you can control the horse relatively well, and it's still skittish, but you've managed to calm it down, and it is trotting off in the direction that you're trying to lead it, I assume.
Karlsgrad by midnight, that's the refrain.
That's a catchy little tune, Piotr.
And so Dr. Blench was, it sounds like, going to be the last person clambering onto a horse.
Yes, well, yeah, I'm trying to get, you know, I've sort of talked Anton into, you know, us using the horses. And I guess, yeah, I'm the last to clamber on.
Okay. In which case... Let's have a roll for Dr. Blench. Not so much for riding the horse, but for getting onto it quickly before the shambling figure catches up with him. And I am going to roll for the shambling figure.
I've rolled a 2. Oh, been shambled.
Ooh, and I've rolled another 6.
Modest.
Yeah. So you clamber, or at least you try to clamber onto the horse, but without stirrups it's difficult, and particularly as you're holding your bag of medical supplies. And the bag that you're carrying drops to the ground. You can see vital bits of equipment just spilling out over the mud. As you know, you've just about got one leg onto the horse's back, the horse is beginning to rear up in panic as this young woman comes forward and grabs hold of your hand with one clammy hand of her own. You can feel blisters popping in her skin and something oozing out as she's holding on. Do you want to give me an inside roll here?
I've rolled a 6. Right.
Okay, so it goes up by 1. Yeah, so you are perhaps not reacting as well as you might in this situation. What does that look like?
I'm just going to become panicked at the fact that I've now got this...
pus all over my hand. I whip it out of the way. I kind of, Hippocratic Oath aside, I try and kick the woman away and grab hold of the horse as tightly as I possibly can. I'm just in fear of my life now. Steady on.
You think the doctor should kick her in the head and her neck snaps and she falls to the ground?
It's a new form of therapy. A boot to the face. It works in 90%.
I'll roll you for it, Spencer.
What, to see that I don't kick her head off? You want me to re-roll to see if I don't kick her head off?
If you want to dispute how this pans out, I'm happy to roll for it.
I think if the doctor is just trying to get away, that's at this stage what's going to happen. I mean, you're barely hanging on to the horse, but showing the horse is pretty keen on getting the fuck out of here as well. So
that's what I'm going to try to do.
Yeah, as long as you can hang on, then yeah, you're fine.
Shall I roll for that, or am I?
No. You don't have to roll for that, because we've already established you're not in control and you have lost your medical supplies. So, once again, Frau Hassenfuss and Piotr see another horse dashing off into the darkness, this time with the doctor half hanging on to it.
He's getting on well. It is funny, Piotr. It's okay to laugh.
Piotr's, you know, repeating, it's okay to laugh. It's okay to laugh.
I'm too busy trying to wipe my hand off on my waistcoat.
The doctor would be much prettier if he smiled.
Anton, meanwhile, is on the back of his horse and has tried calming it down a bit. He's looked around and said, "Oh, we must make haste," he says, looking back at the figure of the young woman who's coming towards you. And he slaps the horse on the rump and it starts running off into the darkness. Not necessarily in the same direction that the other two horses went.
I was beginning to wonder, where did Sheridan end up? He thinks he's winning the race, obviously, at this point.
Not that we care about him, but where is he?
Yeah. Then I think a short while later, Sheridan has managed to keep hold of the horse, but a short while later, the horse slows down and it seems to need a bit of a rest. You can't really tell where the hell you are. Every now and then you've passed trees. You've definitely gone off the road. And you can see off in the distance, well, maybe not that far away, you can see lights. Not bright lights, but, yeah, a couple of maybe old lanterns or something.
I pat the horse on the neck and I say, there, Daisy. Yes, have a bit of grass. I'll hop off. What will-o'-wisp is that up ahead in this foul mire, I wonder? Shall we go and investigate? I'll try and gently coax her forward to walk after I dismount. Will she come with me, or is she going to stay where she is?
Give me a roll to see how well-disposed she is towards you.
Okay. Oh, no, I rolled a 3, so that's a fail, isn't it?
No, it isn't. I mean, I'm not rolling against you. She is not exactly trotting along beside you, but with the occasional nudge, she does seem to be moving in roughly the same direction as you.
Yes, that's right, girl. Yes, you can smell it too, the darkness around us and the spirits that haunt these woods too. Your nostrils flare quite beautifully. As I walk, I guess I'm going through some light undergrowth. It's a bit muddy underfoot.
Yeah, and you do realise that coming up just onto the edge of, you don't know if it was the road you were on before, but it's certainly a path.
Okay, well, I'll continue. The path seems to lead towards the lights, does it?
It does, yeah.
Then I will coax Daisy again. Not that that's her name, I've just given her that name, so that's maybe why she's not coming quite as willingly.
I think you could. It'd be Gänseblümchen.
Gänseblümchen. Yes, if I could say that more than once, maybe.
Gänseblümchen.
Gänseblümchen. And I'll head towards, presumably, some kind of cottage or farm up ahead.
Yeah, it's neither of those things. As you get closer, you can see a low stone wall and then what looks like quite a large, imposing building behind it. Perhaps your first inclination was that it might be a church, but you realise that you're looking at a chapel that's just outside a much larger building.
Ah, a place of sanctuary in amongst all this darkness, Gänseblümchen. Yes, maybe we'll find sanctuary within, but you might have to stay outside. We will see. Is there a door out facing me?
Yeah, you find a set of large wooden oaken doors with iron bars on them, or at least iron frames. There is a door knocker.
Well, yes, grasping the huge iron ring in my hand, I rap it three times against the wood.
And there is a long wait, and eventually you hear a fairly tremulous man's voice from the other side saying, who is it?
Merely a wandering poet.
Wandering? Why are you wandering?
Oh, a terrible accident befell us. Our conveyance was wrecked terribly on the road. My companions are surely not far behind.
I'm sorry, I can't let anyone else in. Not after last time.
Nonsense, my good man, nonsense. Open up your portals and let me in. I will pay you handsomely.
We have no need of money here, just safety. Please, leave us in peace, please, for God's sake, please leave us.
I simply won't hear of it. No, no, no. We can make sure you are safe. I bring a doctor with me. A doctor, someone that can heal your ailments.
Actually, yeah, now you can give me a roll to see how convincing you can be here. And I think, yeah, you could bring your profession die in here if you...
Okay, yeah, sure.
If you want.
Well, I rolled a 3 again. A 3 and a 1. So...
He sounds hesitant.
You know what? I'm going to use my insight dice.
And get a re-roll.
And get a re-roll.
So you're rolling 3 dice here, and if you bring your insight die in, if that comes up high, it provokes an insight roll.
Well, I rolled a 5 on one of my normal dice and a 4 on my insight dice. So,
all right. In which case, you don't have to make an insight roll, and yeah, that is perfect. So there is a brief pause, and then you hear the sound of a bolt being pulled back, and the door opens slightly, and you can see that there's candlelight inside, and you're looking at a fairly young-looking. What you now realise is a monk dressed in brown robes with a tonsure who's looking at you with wide eyes and says, you have a doctor?
Indeed, indeed.
Where is he?
But more importantly, are you brewing monks?
And that seems like the perfect opportunity to cut away to the others. So, Dr. Blench was tearing through the countryside, barely holding onto this horse. If you want to try to, now that you're out of danger, exert some kind of control over the animal and get yourself into a position, you can give me a roll there.
Roll a 6.
Oh, okay. So, what can I do with that?
Perhaps I've made the horse too relaxed and it's stopped galloping?
No, I think, yeah, you have managed to gain control of the horse. And, yeah, it's slowing down a bit.
Is it possible that I'm in control, but I don't know where I'm going? Maybe.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You have no idea where you are. And, yeah, again, you've kind of gone off the path, but now you've come back on. And you're moving through what looks like the remains of a village. But... You know, you're picking this out in the moonlight through the mist, and there's no signs of life at all. There's just these empty buildings looming up all around you. But there, in the centre of town, in the town square as you're passing through, there is just this pile of bodies that has been stacked like cordwood.
Terrible business.
It looks like it must have been most people in the village. I mean, there's men, women, children, old and young. Just stacked relatively neatly, but obviously as time has gone on, the piles have become less organised. And as you're passing by, you can hear from within this mound of bodies the sound of someone crying.
Right, well, I'm going to stop, try and stop the horse, and call out...
Okay, yeah, we've established you're in control of the horse.
Is it a child crying, or is it an adult cry? Is it sobbing, or is it crying for help?
Yeah, it sounds young, but it doesn't sound that coherent. I mean, it sounds just like terror.
So, and up somebody who's distraught. Well, I have to investigate because, you know, I'm a doctor, and if there's somebody here that can be saved, then I guess... The other woman was too far gone, and we all know you're aggressive to medical professionals. They don't take lightly to that.
Oh, now the Hippocratic Oath comes back to you. I see.
They'll kick you in the face.
You can't treat anyone in mist. It's true. That's a fact. You can't treat anyone in the mist.
That's very true. And also, lady with blisters, ew, gross. Big pile of bodies, what the hell?
I'm going to skirt around. I'm not sifting through the bodies. I'm going to walk around the mound, see if I can see anybody calling out, hello?
Yeah, there is quite the smell of corruption here. It seems that some of the bodies have been here for a little while. And as you're passing through in the gloom, you can see that some of these bodies, in fact, all of the ones you get a reasonable look at, only it's difficult to tell for sure because there's no artificial light here. You don't have a lantern. You're doing this entirely through moonlight, through the mist. But it does look like all the bodies you can see so far, yeah, a lot of them were infected. Clearly you can see blisters and pustules. But they do seem to have died violently. You're looking at bodies that have been hacked up and crushed.
Sure.
I think this is probably worth an insight roll as you're standing there in this charnel pile looking at these mutilated bodies.
Roll a 3. My insight is 2.
Okay. So your insight is now 3. Yeah, I mean, this isn't just an outbreak of the plague. This is a massacre you're looking at.
Someone has survived here.
Yeah, and you can see this pale hand poking out of the pile of bodies. Fingers twitching, grasping.
Is it possible for me to reach without kind of... I don't want to wade into the bodies or anything, but if I can grasp the hand at all and try and pull the person out?
Yep, you can do that. And I mean, it's going to be difficult doing this without getting anything on you because, the hand is still covered with filth from the putrefying bodies that have covered it.
Well, I've already had my right hand in some unfortunate business, so I'm going to accept the fact that, if I've got anything dangerous on that, it's already happened. I'm going to try and haul this person out from the bodies.
Okay, and you haul them out and you can just see, it's difficult to tell because it's dark and they're covered with fluids that you don't necessarily want to identify. But, with the matted hair, you think it's a young girl, maybe about 10 or 11. She looks like she's been hurt and she's certainly not very well. She's looking at you, wiping the filth away from her eyes. Oh, bless you, sir. Bless you, sir. Oh, have you come to save me?
I can only do so much. Unfortunately, I've been relieved of my tools and the substances that keep my companion tolerable. But tell me, is there a well or a pump here in the village so we can at least get you cleaned up?
Yes, there is a well, but we can't stay here. He might come back. He might come back, sir. You have to get me away from here. He might come back.
Are you telling me this is the work of one person?
I hid in the bodies last time so he wouldn't find me, and then he just piled more bodies on top of me and I couldn't get free. And, I thought I was going to die down there, sir. I thought I was going to die down there.
Listen, we'll clean you up as quickly as possible and then we'll get you out of here, okay? I have a horse. We'll take you to the nearest village where I'm heading and we'll get you some proper help.
Where are you heading, sir?
Karlsgrad, yes. I'm heading to Karlsgrad.
You were heading to Karlsgrad. And with that, you can see her body goes rigid. And so, oh, but no, sir, that's where he came from. That's where he came from.
But is it not a safe haven in these plague-ridden times?
And she just looks at you disbelievingly and then looks around at the piles of bodies all around you. And let's cut to, I think, Peter and Frau Hassenfuss. So, yeah, you at some point, I mean, even though you are in control of the horse, at some point you've lost Anton as well. Between the darkness and the mist, maybe he's gone off ahead of you. Maybe, his horse just went somewhere, down a side road. Maybe you went down a side road. You're not really sure where the hell you are.
Well, Piotr, I don't know, what is he, 13, maybe? He's all ears, really. There's not much more to him than ears. An orphan. Anton didn't really mean that much to him. The horses, on the other hand. Margarita is, apart from now Frau Hasenfuss, Margarita was probably one of Piotr's closest companions. So Anton, not that bothered.
Have we lost everyone? Everyone else in the stage is nowhere to be found.
Yeah, it's really difficult finding any landmark. You can see the occasional tree, but it's been a while since you've seen any signs of human habitation.
Mm. No noises, no lights, no nothing.
No, in fact, you'd expect to hear more noises out in the darkness. You'd expect to hear wild animals and owls and stuff like that. But it's been really quite eerily quiet.
Piotr, do you know where we are right now?
Piotr's just shaking his head. No.
You are a jolly little fellow. I will say that.
Nodding. And imagining like a face like the cover of Mad. That kid on the cover of Mad magazine, I think.
Alfred E. Newman.
That's exactly who I was imagining, is Alfred E. Newman, yes.
So any opportunity to show those teeth, he'll take it.
Yes. Yes, very handsome.
I've got no idea where we are. No idea whatsoever.
Do you think maybe Margarita knows? Margarita would be able to get us to some place? You know, sometimes horses have a sense of things.
Piotr's eyes, he's got a natural, he can just switch to serious. So he just switches to serious and he's going to try and communicate with the horse to get them back on the straight and narrow.
Okay. Well, I think it's going to be dumb luck where you end up. And let's reflect this by putting it down to a dice roll. So,
I mean, I am particularly dumb. So, you know, I could put that down as an occupation roll.
Occupation.
No, this is just purely going to be luck.
No? Okay, it's fine.
So I'd say like, on a 1 to 2, you're going to end up wherever it is that Sheridan is. On a 3 to 4, you're going to come across Dr. Blench. And on a 5 or 6, you're going to end up somewhere else.
Oh my God. 3 options. This is incredible.
Come on, somewhere else.
Oh shit, it's a 6.
Excellent. That's what we wanted.
Okay. Then you ride for what seems to be some time. You're not entirely sure whether you've kept to the paths or the way. It seems like you probably have. And then, through the mist, you can see lights up ahead. And just a few of them, just some distance above the ground. And as you get closer, you can see that, yeah, you're coming up to the city wall. You're coming up to the wall and the main gates to Karlsgrad. Or at least what you assume is Karlsgrad. I mean, there can't be too many places around here with city walls. There are a couple of, you know, big wooden doors that are firmly shut. And you can see that there are watchmen up on the walls, overlooking the door. And, you know, as your horse gets a bit closer, you hear a man's voice shouting through the fog, "Who goes there?"
Piotr's in serious mode, so I'll leave it to Frau Hasenfuss here.
Yes, I call out in my shrill, piercing voice, "Yes, this is Frau Hasenfuss, and my assistant, my boy. We're traveling by stage to Karlsgrad. Is this Karlsgrad? We were traveling by stage and unfortunately seem to have broken an axle and we've had to make it across on horseback. And I'm afraid I've lost my companions. But we're hoping to get some sort of shelter. It's rather nasty out tonight. Very unsettling."
There's a pause and the man's voice comes back and says, I'm sorry, Frau, but the city is under quarantine. With the plague, we cannot risk letting anyone else in."
I mean, I can assure you that...
"By orders of the Baron."
"The Baron? Baron, what's his name? I might know him."
Baron von Graf.
Von Graf. Do I know any von Grafs?
You could give me a roll.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, let's see. I mean, I think you could even bring your occupation die into this.
I think, yes, because I have a nose for money. I think I might have...
I was going to say you've excelled. You've excelled in getting to know the upper echelons.
I have. You know, I get to know them and then sometimes they go away. All right. Oh, blimey. Okay, well, I've gotten a 6.
Oh, yes. In fact, the Baron von Graf is your former brother-in-law. You married his brother, Otto, a little while back, and, well, obviously he came to a nasty end.
You know, he fell out of a window onto a knife, the last thing.
Twice.
And so, yes, the Baron von Graf knows you. He is very familiar with you.
Were he and his brother close? You know, were they...
Very.
They were very close. Oh, von Graf, yes. Oh, dear, I do have a history with him. I don't know if he'll be happy to see me. Well, thank you for your time. I must confer with my boy here so we can figure out an alternate plan. If the city is truly under quarantine, as you say that it is, you know, you wouldn't be willing to possibly let us in for, I don't know, a few. And I just sort of like pull out a couple of fairly large glittering coins from my purse and say, we could perhaps come to a bit of an arrangement, and we don't need to necessarily let anybody know what it was.
There's another pause, and the man's voice comes back. It sounds a bit more tremulous this time. It says, Frau, even if I could be bought, if the Baron learned that I took a bribe to let a visitor into the city, a stranger into the city, he would give me over to Victor. No. No, Frau, no. We cannot take risks like that.
Victor? Who's Victor? Should I speak to Victor? Is Victor somebody that I should get to know? Is Victor single?
You do not ever want to meet Victor.
Pity.
And is that a good point to leave this session?
I think it is. I think Victor is very used to being left on his own at the end of the day. So single is probably a good description of him. Thank you so much, Scott. That was brilliant. I don't know how we conjured... I think this could definitely be a 1960s Italian Gothic film. But thank you for creating such a vivid world for us all to suddenly emerge fully fleshed into. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. I was not anticipating running three parallel games, but, well, here we are.
We have well and truly split the party within the first 20 seconds.
It's thank you time again. And as usual, I wanted to thank all of our backers at all levels. We can't do the show without you. Well, we could, but it wouldn't be anywhere near as good, because with your support and help, we can do all of the extra things that we want to do. I also want to thank all the players, who I realised I haven't really been thanking in our thanks section. So thank you to all the players. I love you all dearly, and I hope that we can continue doing Grizzly Peaks far, far into the future until we're old and grey and can't remember what happened in the last session. Actually, I think that kind of applies to me already, but for the rest of you, you'll get there soon, don't worry. And if you do like our show, which I assume you are if you've listened all the way to the end, then do come and join the fun at patreon.com/grizzlypeaks. Look forward to seeing you there. And this week, extra special thanks go out to two wonderful new Patreons. Firstly, Paddy Houlihan, who joined at the Grizzled Patron level. Thank you so much for joining, Paddy. I hope you continue to enjoy our podcast for many years to come. And even more special thanks to Stuart Hawkes, who did join at the Grizzled Patron level, but then, I don't know, had a rush of blood to the head and upped his pledge to the Grizzly Peak level. So he joins that select bunch of people that will be joining us for a exclusive game that I will be running sometime later this year, which you'll all be able to hear on the feed. Well, at some point. We have a somewhat delayed production schedule, as most podcasts, but it'll be coming soon.